This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mother, don't you recognize your son?
Welcome, everybody, once again to Oh, a Sopranos podcast. As always, my name is Joe Spellman, and this is
David Fiedernick.
And this is
Paul Gullius.
And we're talking, hey guys, new season. Season three.
Every breath you
going.
Season 3, episode 1. Yeah, new segment. We just sang one of the songs in its entirety from the episode.
Yeah, Mr. Jerry's Neighborhood, great soundtrack.
True.
Great singing of the song from us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Much like Tony Soprano singing Dirty Work in this episode. Yeah. You know?
Unforgettable.
Look, go back a minute. Close your eyes and tell me you can't just see all the FBI agents just fucking storming the Soprano compound.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking breaking in, doing their FBI thing, like little jackals.
Yep. I mean, out of all the Tony singing to himself moments, and there are many, Dirty Work is probably up there.
Yeah. I think that's like the creme de la creme.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work.
Joe is a huge Steely Dan fan.
Yeah, I'm a big Steely Dan fan.
Big Steely Dan guy.
I was on a mini vacation with my parents this weekend I started singing a Steely Dan song and my dad did not know it. And then
I'm shocked.
Where's this story going?
Yeah,
and then day later, he started singing a Steely Dan song, and I was like, "How did you not know the other one? No, you're singing this fucking one." Anyway, that was a fun, great story.
Wow,
has nothing to do with anything.
Up your dad on a Steely Dan.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
We'll get him there, Spells.
We'll get back to the episode, maybe.
Give us more updates on your dad and whether he knows things or not throughout this episode. Yeah.
Okay, my parents finished watching The Sopranos, which they finished a couple weeks ago.
Oh, see, now there's a good seg. And what'd they think?
Yeah.
Wait, rewatch or just watching it for the first time?
No, watch it for the first time.
Oh, damn.
Really?
They cruise through it. My mom loved it.
Yeah.
I could see your dad being like, it was a little violent.
No. I mean, he just like he. I mean, he definitely did comment on like.
I mean, he's from Jersey. Violent. He's the one from Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, they met in New Jersey,
right?
At Pizza Land.
No,
your dad knocked out somebody in the parking lot and won your mom's heart.
No,
right. wasn't that something Carmella said? I don't know.
More like he knocked out my mom and then like had to marry her. And the child is me.
This episode is a real window into your life.
We're just gonna be talking about Spells' entire life this episode.
My dad could remember his other children's names, but he for some reason didn't remember mine.
My mom was very much like of the idea of like she was like, oh, this is just like it's just like Goodfellas, it's just like you know, it's just like all these other mob things. Mm-hmm. And she didn't like realize like
it's its own
that
thing.
it was something and better,
right.
You know?
Right.
So she was really like surprised and like really, you know, yeah, loved it.
That's nice. Great.
Nice.
So you boys excited for season three?
I am so excited. I love this episode so much.
This is where I started watching live. This was back on originally aired March 24th, 2001. I was a junior in high school.
Mm.
I probably started watching live at with this one too. Yeah, I definitely did.
Joe, you must be, because you see like the date in the beginning of the episode says April 29th, 2000, like on the FBI paper. So I think Pussy's like last
right
interaction with Tony before he obviously has died.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I figure it, Joe, you and Meadow are probably the same age, because then like that fall, like she's away at college.
Yeah,
right?
Fall of 2000. Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I'm probably the same age as
maybe in Jamie. Real life. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm probably am.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, well, that would make sense.
Another great way to relate it back to spells here.
That's why I related so much to this season. I did start watching The Sopranos in college.
Same, yeah.
And we had HBO at Hofstra because the president of Hofstra went to HBO.
HBO went to Hofstra.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, this is kind of roundabout.
Which I've said this before. But I was watching the episode thinking that it's actually, you know, because I feel like I just see AJ smoking cigarettes at a pizza parlor. Oh, and yeah. It reminds me of what maybe your childhood would be, Dave.
Yes. Well,
I mean, you probably weren't like smoking.
It wasn't in the suburbs. Like we wasn't like a suburban. Like we didn't
really
skateboard.
Baggy jean shorts. Right.
But you know, you would definitely like go to the mall and shit and like fuck around like that. And like
sure,
like, the tone of the conversation is very on point. Even if the actual lines sound fucking written by a fucking 65-year-old, like
yeah. Well, all right, we'll get there. Let's set up the episode.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Because this is, if people don't remember, this is the opener to season three. This is Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood, where it's all about the feds trying to get a bug into the Soprano home. And then there's hardly any other like B or C story. Like there's shit going on with Patsy Parisi, who is mourning the death of his twin brother on their birthday, and he takes a piss in Tony's pool. So those are probably the things you remember the episode by, but it's largely like it deviates from like very weirdly from what we know the show to be up until this point. And I think I'm trying to remember, but like back when I watched it live, I remember not liking this episode, 'cause I was like,
oh really?
Like nothing happened. Right. Like, why do they focus on the feds?
All the other stuff going on with the other characters are really just reasons to get them to have to come back to the Soprano house to like, mess with you know the tension of them like trying to plant the the bug.
Well, now I get it, and I think the reason that they focused so much on like the nitty-gritty of the feds, all the work they have to do to pull this off, and all the hurdles they have to jump to pull this off is it's really almost a send-up of what a police procedural episode is like.
Yeah,
like do you guys even notice like the stock like sky shot of Quantico,
the
headquarters and stuff, like it just and even the music, like I mean it's great, it's brilliant, it's their own take, but it's definitely feels like they're sort of like subverting the tropes of shit like Law and Order or CSI or whatever, fucking
the
bullshit
Peter Gunn theme into police song.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Very sick. Clever.
So
I'll be watching you as they're trying to set up, like or as they're following people around.
Yep.
So smart, so sick, so genius.
Didn't get it back in the day. But I don't know if you knew this. They aired both this and Prashai Lavushka the next episode back to back on premiere night.
Because I think
they were like, maybe this episode's not gonna like hook people, like remind people how great this
that makes sense, because like also you think about the time in between seasons that people are waiting. And, you know, before the new season starts, everybody's all jacked up and like, mm-hmm. oh, and like, obviously the finale of season two is so fucking huge.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, you're like, oh fuck, what's going to happen? Where are we going to find these people? That actually is smart on whoever, HBO's just HBO or David Chase.
Maybe it was Chase, you know, who was like, hey, why don't we air these back to back? But
right. It aired on March 2001.
Yep.
Okay.
We're so innocent back then. But yeah, of course, the season opens with the classic Tony coming down the driveway to get the paper.
Of course.
But then, like, immediately over to the FBI, they're talking about, like, Pussy has been killed, and so they need a new approach to, like, get, like, to trap Tony Soprano. And by the way, they're, like, off the bat, they're, like, they're just showing the FBI to be, like, so feeble and just, like, misunderstanding of what reality really is, because they get two things wrong off the bat, saying Richie was whacked by the cartel. No,
yep.
Janice did it.
Yep.
And then there's a guy who's like, but is a guy's own mother really going to testify against him? And it's like, absolutely. Yeah. Livia would have testified against her son.
Yeah. As long as the actress doesn't die, like, she absolutely will. Yeah.
I shouldn't laugh because I'm still mourning the death of the brilliant Nancy Marjan.
We pour one out for Nancy Marjan.
Pour one out right now. I want to hear it, Dave. I want our listeners to hear it.
I'll just pour it on my computer. I'll pour my beer on my computer.
But then we finally get back to the gang in this scene, like at the pork store when they're just sitting down for lunch.
Which has been making the rounds because of COVID and, like, everybody, you know, using hand sanitizer to no end now and, you know, washing your hands over and over again.
Like, yeah, this is the classic Pauly spiel, you know, virus, bacteria, they migrate from the soul up.
I got to watch TV to understand the world.
What a great line.
Great line. It's like so that classic.
That lunch looks fucking like, looks huge. Fantastic.
Pretty damn good, except also, like, Silvio's like ashing his cigarette in the salad. Like,
it's true. Yeah, funny that they're like having salad. You don't see them eating salad a lot.
Silvio's all grossed out by him talking about urine, yet he's smoking.
Yeah.
While everybody's fucking trying to
very
eat.
Closed room.
Yeah.
But he does end Pauly's spiel with a great shut the fuck up.
Oh, it's great.
One of Soul's best.
Yep.
But this is where we sort of get the sense that Patsy is maybe not over. He knows that Tony murdered his twin brother in the season two premiere, actually. So it's been a full season since it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of like plants the seed for what happens later. He's like all fucked up, and they sort of like. Was it me, or were they sort of like positioning Gigi to be more of like a central character here?
I mean, he was until like he wasn't. I mean,
because what did he really do in season two? He's around,
right?
He doesn't have like a ton of lines. He's the one who killed Philly. Yeah, Spoons, the one who kills Parisi. Philly, so it makes sense that he's involved in the storyline, but. But yeah, up until then. But I don't know. What do you guys think about Gigi? I sort of like.
I like the actor a lot. But like the problem is like he's given that scene where he kills Philly, and then he's basically just like a guy that has to come complain about Ralphie for the season three. You know, like
the character doesn't really have like much more than he's just a fucking.
I mean, the most memorable. Things he did in the series was he killed Philly and then he dies in the toilet.
So maybe they just, I don't know, maybe they wanted to give him something, but they also just like he wasn't really particularly interesting like a Ralph.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame because like, you know, you end up seeing like the genesis of Vito's character, and it's like the guy who played Gigi was fucking really good actor. What's his name? John Sestone.
John Sestone. Yeah.
Like he's a fucking good actor. Like I think like he warranted more. I think probably like what happened was that they painted him into a corner with the Ralphie stuff, and it's like, there's nowhere to go from there. Yeah. It's like he had to die so Ralphie could win that fight. You know.
Yeah. Well, it almost looks like Gigi's just to like another puss. Like it, by look alone, you know.
True. Not as fat.
He's not as fat,
right?
But just like looks like the same guy, you know. So maybe that's what kind of turned them off of it. I don't know, or they probably didn't even want to write anything for him to begin with. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, when you're having Joey Pants come on board this season, like you're throwing him like the best stuff.
I mean, yeah.
As far as new characters. But yeah, so then we get these sort of like side stories that are just like sort of stupid nothing stories.
Yeah,
but that's kind of the point of the family, like what they're doing as the FBI is trying to coordinate, like getting a time where the house is empty. So we have Meadow finally going off to college for her freshman year.
Yeah. We meet her roommate.
We meet her roommate, Caitlin.
Hunter alert, baby.
Waiting for it.
Hunter,
God damn it.
Hunter's Gorilla Watch.
Scramble. When was our last one? When was our last
there
one?
Are, I don't know. There are so many more than I think there are going to be.
I totally forgot.
Every time
that
we do it, I think it's
this,
the last time episode. Until the finale. And then, like,
me too. Me
she
too.
Pops up again.
She's so forgettable that it's just like we could quote lines from any scene of any episode, and we forget how much Hunter Scangarello, David Chase's daughter, is in this show.
It's pretty crazy. Also, do you notice that they're talking about Eric Scatino is like addicted to acid now?
Yeah. It's a great little addendum to that story, that kid's life.
Yeah. Like going to get kicked out of Montclair State. Like, you're supposed to go to fucking Georgetown.
Addicted to acid? Man, that guy's brain is going to be fried.
He's going to be working at the pizza parlor.
He's going to head out west and redeem himself like his dad.
See, but this definitely, is what I was definitely. Talking about. Like, you know, Feudy, that's you in high school, and this is you in college, you know, because you went to college
that's
in
true.
New York City.
That's party, true.
Well, I got to say, those dorms and everything, like felt very much like I went to school at UConn in stores in the middle of the fucking farmland. But
they're very
the
generic,
dorms themselves
like classic.
Felt, but they felt, dorms, I mean, dorms yeah. themselves just feel generic, right?
Yeah, exactly.
When you're living in them, it's like you could put up a poster and that's what makes it yours, but everybody's just replacing the same spot with a different poster. But Aria Grainer, was playing Caitlin. You guys recognize her?
No.
You didn't recognize her? She's in like a ton of stuff.
She's in a lot of stuff. Yeah. And I saw her, I forget what the play was, but I saw her on Broadway. She was really fucking good. It was after Sopranos.
What else has she been in? Because I thought I looked her up one time and I was like,
at least for a while, she was working a lot.
Well, things it says IMDb says she's known for is Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Mm-hmm. What's Your Number?
Yeah, she was
with
like
it.
The friend.
Disaster Artist. But I actually watched, I think it was on Showtime, I'm Dying Up Here. It was like...
Oh,
comedians in the 70s she was like
she's a good actor. I mean, like,
she was good. I mean, she's annoying, her character, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's the roommate that you like dread getting in college. It's like you know, I'm like thankful I never had a horrible roommate. I got very lucky with my college roommates. Never had anyone that was a nightmare like that.
I don't know about that. I had boring ass college, like my
yeah, maybe that's worse.
College roommate was boring and like.
Do you like complain Bells, about I, the noise?
It
and
sounds
stuff?
To no, me like just, you're like your roommate like fucking hated you probably.
No. He didn't have a pulse. He was like, just talk like this. He's from Fall River, Massachusetts, and.
Oh God! Enough!
We gotta get him on the pod, man.
No, we'll put everyone to sleep. I mean, he was a nice guy, but he was just like a fucking just stayed in his room, was on his computer the whole time.
I just imagine it's like PCU with like Spade and Piven, and like Spade's like, and like Spellman's like pouring beer on his head and stuff.
Yeah, like,
fuck Fall River. Fuck Fall River, Mass.
I didn't.
So that was Meadow's little storyline. But Carm with the tennis coach and eight.
Yeah, that's like a.
First
although
of all,
I always remember the like skeevy ass fucking FBI agents like how Green was my fucking valet.
Dude, a lot of people take issue with that line. That line as like the worst line of the series.
Oh no,
it's terrible. I mean, it's very quotable, but it's nobody would fucking say that.
Yeah, it's quotable,
is my fucking valet. Like, why is he referencing, like, a 1940s?
Green eggs and ham.
Like, movie about, I looked it up, it's like about, like Welsh, like, coal miners or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's got to be like an old man, some weird old man like phrase. That's I guess. It's a Renzulli holdover.
The only FBI agent who would ever say that is if David Chase became an FBI agent. So, like, come on now.
His partner's like, the fuck is wrong with this?
I would argue that's not like even in the top five worst lines of this episode.
And those two, when they put the microphone successfully into the lamp, like those two in the car, high five, like so stupid. They're like, yay!
Yeah, they really make these people out to be like idiots, you know? Like even I mean,
they're like worse than Harris, civilians, like, right? Like look at how like lame the civilians are made out to be. Right. They're made out to look like even more, you know?
And I think Agent that's sort of the point.
Even Agent Harris, who's like later on, obviously like becomes like a friend of Tony's, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he looks like a fucking doofus. And
he's like, they fucking made me. Like, they made you. You idiot. You stay mouthful. In the same car, the same corner every fucking. But
mouthful
but
of sandwich, like a fucking idiot.
But I think that was kind of the point, right? If David Chase decided to do a send up of that procedural, you know, that's the like if you're not making a show about this side of crime, you're making the show about like the police procedural and like and how the good guys catch the bad guys, and it's always this slick, sleek, everybody's cool and like, you know, funny, sharp, witty lines and like this and that, and these guys are just normal human beings, and for the most part, they do pull off some impressive stuff. Like that fake lamp is actually pretty impressive. They take it down to Quantico, and like paint it and shit, and
and they're just like climbing up into the Cusimano's trees and shit, and like, you know,
right. I mean the best moment of the FBI being just like bumbling idiots is when they're on the wires in the backyard and they're like trying to look into the Soprano home and then they see
Patsy drunk.
Stumbling in fucking drunk off his ass, and the guy's just like, I don't understand this at all. I just thought that was funny, but
they take out their guns too, like, what are they gonna do? What are they gonna
right
like, yeah, can't you shoot this guy in the head, yeah. But then so then the other storyline is AJ, they're following Baby Bing, as they call him, going to school. Not the most exciting of plot lines, but dude, here's two of my worst lines of the series, I think, come from this episode.
Yep.
One is the kid who's like, my mom's all get involved. It's like, hello, I am with boarding.
Boarding. The worst.
David Chase, fuck you, man. Fuck you for that line.
the only good line in that, like the whole interaction with those kids is like, the kind of fat kid, like who's like with the glasses, and he goes, "That food tastes like ass."
Yeah,
it's
like, tastes like ass only, anyway. Like, I laugh at that. Like, I think that's great. That's the best part of that.
Also,
it's the most authentic of all the.
Well, I definitely said things taste like ass all the time back then.
And don't backwash. Yeah. That was a pretty
don't backwash. Oh,
don't
that
backwash.
Thing.
That's true.
The other thing was the kid who goes, "Sup, Slim?" I just hate that for some reason. Fuck you.
What position? Douchebag.
Hey. but this sort of introduces the storyline of AJ trying out for football, which ends up which like playing into the bigger story of the season.
Yeah.
For AJ at least.
Which is mostly great because we get Pia Costa back.
Hey, yes. Oh man, can't wait. Yeah, we got a Scandarella watch this episode, but I'm doing a Pia Costa watch. So
if you want to, hey, we were talking about IMDb pages. You want to take a look at an IMDb page. I don't think he even has one.
You want to look at it, you got to make it for him.
Mr. Pia Costa, portrayed by Mr. Pia Costa. He's just a guy who like wandered on set off the suburbs of Jersey.
His name's Brian Pia Costa. Like, it's not even the actual like first name of the kid.
They didn't make him an IMDb page because they thought he just was like wandering onto the set and accidentally being filmed into a scene. He's not even an actor.
Right.
But yeah, I mean,
horribly written stuff. It's just like, just, you know, like
the worst. Cringiest.
I thought it was interesting. We had Dan on last week, and he was talking about how, you know, like Robert Eiler's mom said, like, oh, you know, he had so much input in how the like kids talked and stuff like that. And I don't doubt that was true in some cases.
No, yeah.
You know, there are definitely some authentic, like, you know, moments and like his. the, like I said, the tone of the Friends is like on point. It was just like the lines were fucking stupid.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And won't talk like maybe that. Maybe we wouldn't be so mad about them if they were delivered better, but it's tough. He didn't give them a lot to work with.
It's true.
But yeah, and then we got the maid and her husband, Stashu?
Stashu,
yeah. Having lunch, and he's like trying to
get Martin his Luther King
citizenship. Yeah, fuck his whore of a mother. yeah, I just think that's so funny. Like the moment where the FBI guy is like, are you Polish by any chance? Like in her mind, she just sees a stranger running up to her. And like, I thought that guy was good too. Like the bumbling FBI guy. And what'd you guys think of the FBI and Jeannie Cusimano scene?
Oh, I love that scene.
She's so funny.
She's so good. They're different for this neighborhood. That's all. They're different. That's all.
They're like, what the fuck? They're in the racist.
Right.
Is this the last time we see Skip?
It might be. Yeah, I think. I don't think we see him again.
That's just funny. He just like comes back for the third season for like one thing, one episode.
Yeah. But he fears power bollocks.
Yeah, fears the parabolics in the backyard.
Like, man, you're gonna give this guy that like you gotta say parabolics? Like,
yeah,
it's cruel.
Part of his charm.
Yes, indeed.
And then ultimately, the water heater blows, which they called. They knew was gonna happen, and they're all laughing about it. And then it fucks their own mission, which I love.
Right.
I also love the part where he's like, "Hey, Tony's got a Black and Decker." Like I can never tell.
I have one of those.
I can never tell if they're like, because HBO doesn't have like advertising partnerships where they're working things into the story like network television does, right?
Like you see that you see them like consuming like actual like they don't hide a lot of the problems.
No, and I think that's good. I think it lends to the realism, but also they do like weird like shout outs to like. You know, like Carmela, like, oh my God, Tony, is this the new Porsche Cayenne? And like,
right.
And they also drink a suspicious amount of Snapple.
Yes.
True.
But,
and then they mentioned Snapple in this episode too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's
well,
right.
Well, HBO has always said that they don't do product placement, right?
So I guess, people are skeptical. A creative decision to use these like real world brands.
Well, people do talk like that. They say
that's
brands.
That's how people talk. Yeah, you're right.
Give me a Manhattan special instead of a soda. they definitely got a ton of money from Manhattan special to do that.
And then I love Patsy and Tony's like final scene, like him like sort That's of great. Like, hey, if you put the grief behind you, right? Say it. Right. Why don't you say it? You know?
Yeah.
Like I just think that's so well. And then they end up becoming by the end of the series. Practically family, right? They're about to
his son is about to marry Meadows, so
right.
I love when he's like, your son, he's AJ's age. We gotta have him up to the house, go swimming in the pool.
He just took a fucking huge peed piss on. Yeah. And then they just cut on Patsy's face, which is perfect. I'm so glad that they decided to be like pull the twin card with him because Dan Grimaldi is so
great.
Good.
Yeah,
he's great. And like, it's one of the few members of the crew that survives, we think. Like,
that's true.
Like, I mean, gets away ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, great character. Great character.
And then by the end, the FBI, you know, is out in the van outside listening to the bug that they successfully placed in the basement. And they're just listening to the fucking Tony and Carm talking about like diet and fucking roughage and this and that. And it just adds to the regularness of life, right? That is like such a theme of this series. Like even these like criminals who people, rever and like just think are the most badass people in the world, like still need to get on the treadmill and talk shit with their wife. And it's just day to day.
Repair their boiler heater.
Shit. Yeah. Repair their boiler.
Right. Like,
and I just think, and they can only listen for 40 seconds at a time and then they got to die.
Right.
But yeah, there's not a whole lot that pushes the plot forward, or sets things up for the season. Like the very opening shot with Tony getting the newspaper, we see headlines about like mob garbage wars heat up. And right. that plays into the next episode where Ralphie finally shows up and they're like torching rivals, garbage trucks and shit. Was right. there anything else that like they set up for the season?
No, I mean, AJ playing football.
Yeah, AJ playing football.
Yeah. I mean, the Meadow and her roommate storyline sort of plays into things
later.
Yeah,
like nothing with Carmella, like the tennis instructor shit is.
I mean, right. I guess like things are like she like is, in that last scene, they're like awkward with each other in the basement. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, she is so bad at tennis, Adriana.
She's awful. Yeah, it's not easy to be that bad at tennis.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, but we don't even see Junior at all.
No.
Yeah, don't see Junior.
Janice obviously isn't back yet. She returns because she went
to Seattle.
Livia dies. So yeah, I mean, it's a pretty standalone episode. I've come to appreciate it for what it is, but some people say, like, even just looking up stuff for fucking internet, some people are like, this is top five episodes. This is, like, I love what they did. I love how different it is from the rest of the series. And you have your people who are like, this fucking, I skip this episode every time because it's a nothing episode. You guys land one way or the other?
I'm somewhere in the middle. I love the episode. I think it's a really good opening to the season episode. I actually like it even more now knowing that you said that they aired this and Proshai like back to back.
It's better received with that episode like as well, you know.
I think it's great, like the going back and forth with like the FBI trying to get the bug in and everything. Like, I don't know. I think it's a fun episode.
It's a fun one. But I don't hate it. I don't particularly like it. I mean, I just like
top five is insane.
It's definitely not top five. And
no way.
I guess I probably. Well, you know what? I would put it. Well, on. I would put it on if I was going on a run. You know, like if I was like. Oh, let's do the first three episodes, like right now.
Right.
I thought you were like, oh, I'm about to go for a jog. I'm
about to go for a jog and watch
which
this.
When I watch TV shows.
Yeah, I'm about to go on the treadmill with my iPad and just Mr. Ruggieri's Neighborhood and a meatball parm.
Oh, yeah. But where would you guys rank it in, like, season openers? Middle of the pack?
Season opener.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's obviously the pilot. There's a guy walks into a psychiatrist's office in season two.
Which I love.
Which is great.
It was a very good year.
Yep. Oh, so good. Season four, I think, is For All Debts, Public and Private. That's where Tony has Christopher kill the guy who maybe killed his father.
Right.
Yep.
Season five is Two Tonys, where he's trying to get back with Melfi. Season six is 6A
members only.
Tony gets shot at the end.
That's a really fucking good one. Members only is really
and then I think we should count 6B as its own season. And,
that's really movies. Yeah, I mean that's probably my favorite episode. Not just opener, but you know,
I would say that's probably my favorite opener for sure.
It's just so quintessential Sopranos at its best.
Yes.
This I'd say is middle of the pack.
Yeah, I guess I never really thought about it because I love season three so much and I associate this with obviously the beginning of season three.
Right.
But I guess it is middle of the pack.
Yeah.
I'd watch it over the pilot.
Sure.
All right, well, fans, let us know what you think, where it lands in the season openers.
Yeah,
let us know. I have a feeling I know where this is going. You guys don't like it. You like the shooting, the killing, the strangling, the fucking
monster fans. You fucking dart dogs.
No, bada bing tits. Hugh, do you want to do an ad read?
Oh, do I?
I know you do. That's why I asked.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about the guys eating in that scene, the ping.
Why is that funny? Tell me why.
Well, because just like them, we've counted on restaurants. You've counted on restaurants. I've counted on restaurants. And guess what? Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. I mean... That's pretty awesome. Ordering is easy.
What other app does that?
Yeah, there are no other apps besides DoorDash. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Nobody fucked with your food. Don't worry. They just left it there. They didn't do anything weird to it. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory even. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open. Those are all my favorite local restaurants. Chipotle, Wendy's, and Cheesecake Factory. There are no others in the LA area. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. And right now, guys, right now, our listeners can get $5 off, zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off your delivery with zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Could have said that in one sentence. Didn't have to three sentences saying that you'll get $5 off your first order by entering code BLUEWIRE. But hey.
Oh, that was a good use of time during the commercial Beautiful. Break. I wish I had thought of that.
Kind of disrespectful to the ad read, but fine.
Okay. Well, we need to address something before we go into fucking internet. We had a negative review on our on iTunes.
Only the second ever, but
for getting too political. And right. This was from, and we discussed this last episode, right?
Or the one before, yeah.
Yeah. It was your sister's crotch. And you know what? Your sister's crotch, we should have predicted it, did the right thing and gave us 5 stars and amended their review. Your sister's crotch says, it's all a big nothing. Here's your 5 stars, because that's all it's about, right, bloodsuckers? I still dig your stupid show, even with your skewed politics. Your sister's crotch.
Thank you.
We thank you.
That's how you do it.
That's how you do a complaint.
This, next time, don't fucking leave us a review like that and not think you're going to get fucking called out and shamed and embarrassed.
Yeah, you get fucking called that. Well, now we're like incentivizing people to give us bad reviews, because then we'll fucking call them out.
Rate us 5 stars and then give us a bad review.
Yeah. I mean, we should still call you out. I mean, that's
yeah.
I mean, we're gonna call you out, but yeah, tell us that we fucking suck. Tell us like, oh, cool, another fucking Sopranos podcast. I listen to all the others. I have no reason to listen to your shit podcast, you three fucking losers. 5 stars.
Yeah.
5 stars.
You know?
That's how you do it.
That's what a gentleman does, or a gentlewoman, okay?
And
please.
And your sister's crotch is certainly a gentleman.
Yes.
Or gentlewoman.
Or gentlewoman.
I would assume gentleman. Or maybe genderless. I don't know.
That's right.
Anyway, let's go into the Sunday Ticket. Sundays are coming back in the NFL. With NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live, out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. That's all nonsense to me. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code Blue Wire at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code Blue Wire. Got through that. That was much easier than yours, Foodie.
That is it is funny that you're reading fantasy football shit that you know nothing. That'd be like me like reading about like Magic the Gathering cards or something. Like,
yo, fuck you. I don't like Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, right.
I do like some Dungeons and Dragons.
I
take issue with the most glorious Sundays ever, because we know the most glorious Sundays ever were when new Sopranos episodes were.
You should have said that during the Henry. That's true.
Well, I thought of it after. Too late. I'm not quick. I'm not like you guys.
oh yeah, yeah. You know, we're so good.
Okay.
All right. Well, all right, we'll get into fucking internet. This is the segment of the show where we source questions, comments, what people are talking about currently about The Sopranos from places like Reddit and Twitter, and that's about it. This one from user, I don't know because I didn't screen grab this correctly, Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood. Chase's episode titles typically possess several interpretations, deviating from what the words mean at face value. For example, Boca, nobody knows anything, long-term parking. For the life of me, I can't understand the seemingly arbitrary title, Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood. Ruggiero is, of course, the plumber in the episode, and Agent Harris has that back and forth with a colleague going on to say the line that reiterates the title. But why? What am I missing? Guys, you want to handle this?
Don't think too deep into it.
Yeah.
It's just...
I think it just sounds like...
It sounds like there goes the neighborhood. You know, it just sounds like a peppy line. Like, well, you know, it's Mr. Ruggiero's neighborhood. And like,
it's
and like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Yeah, that's it's a play on Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Oh,
is it?
Yeah.
I always thought it was.
Yeah.
Mr. Ruggiero, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, that was the name of his show. And Mr. the Rogers Italianized version of Rogers, Ruggiero.
Right. Is that true?
And I think that's sort of, yeah. I think that's why they threw it. But I think you know, it's not just like, hey, isn't this funny? Like, Mr. Ruggiero, like, look at the WAP version of Mr.
Rogers.
That's
what David,
but I think it's more.
That's what David Chase said?
Go ahead. I don't know if he, yeah, I think, yeah, he wrote this episode. So I think that's, I don't remember where I learned this, but it is an allusion to Mr. Rogers. But I think it's like, it's also,
I almost think it's just a throwaway.
No, I think it's kind of like a commentary on like the suburbs and how you don't really know who your neighbor is. You know, like the whole like Mr. Won't Rogers famous neighbor? Line is like, yeah, won't you be my neighbor? And then they
get Jeannie Cusmano like being exactly. like, oh, you don't know.
Neighbor and it's just like the stark differences between people that are separated by like a chain link fence in suburban America. You know, I think maybe you started this by saying don't think too much into it, and I thought too much into it, but I think that's
maybe David Chase probably said that, but I don't believe that's why he chose that.
It's on the Wikipedia page. So
I mean,
take that for.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't buy it really. I just think,
damn,
because I just think it's like, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like the way he says the line, the way it's like shot, it seems like. They watched the episode and like he was like, oh, we'll name it this. Like, yeah. And instead of like it being a reference to Mr. Rogers, but this is the Italian version, that seems so convoluted to me. It seems like it's trying to like come up with a reason when really there is none. But I don't know.
I think ultimately it started as like a bad joke. Like, you know, instead of Mr. Rogers, it's Mr. Ruggiero. And then I read too much into it. Maybe.
Ooh, Joe, what fans? I don't know. I don't buy it. I think it's just another, like, whatever. We'll call it this. This is a line.
This next one in Sopranos episode season 3 episode 1. This one from Twitter at Don Gut Meng. I don't know. In Sopranos episode season 3 episode 1, Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood. How did they know about the water heater exploding? Who was home?
What? The maid?
The maid finds it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently a lot of people, because I saw this also on Reddit and multiple times on Twitter, people didn't understand like how the FBI got word that the water heater
the
was
the maid never left exploding. The house, and like she was heard going, oh my God. I guess like
right.
It's a quick scene, but yeah. I mean I don't know what you're doing. You're fucking because
she got
at
pissed
your
off
at
state statue, and then went back, right? Or was that earlier?
No, that's earlier.
That's earlier.
Oh. Either way, the maid ended up fucking alerting the rest of the family.
He hasn't left the house yet.
Right.
I'm pretty sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Um, Yeah, anyway, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, it's just like Calling All Cars. It's the same reason, like, that's why.
I don't want to drag that out, but I disagree. I think it's absolutely Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. No, it's a play on Mr. Rogers.
I'm with Fury here, but I'm
you're
also...
You're basing this only on a Wikipedia page, by the way.
No. I
just
to you,
always I'd... felt that way. Like every time when I first saw the episode, like
but
I
there's
thought,
no, there's nothing referencing that, and it's just because there's an R.
Mr. Roger
Mr. Rogers,
and Rogerio, Mr. Rogerio sound similar.
There's a R and a G. I don't know.
Sounds like the Italianized, like fucking, like Italian American Mr. Rogers. No. Like, how are you not?
Because
what happened up in Santa Barbara?
Why would you? But why would it be a reference to that?
Oh my God! This is why I was almost not going to say anything.
But if you have other episodes like Calling All Cars or Toodle Fucking New or other episodes like that are like based off of like lines that are said and this line that is said,
no,
you would think that he would name it just arbitrarily,
right? But
why would he say it's Mr. Rogerio's Neighborhood? Like, you wouldn't just say that about like any plumber,
right? Okay, so I'm looking at the Wikipedia
but
entry.
Like, it's his neighborhood. Like, he works that neighborhood. Just like
he's not a cop.
Like Salvitro has his neighborhood. I mean, that's a thing that they say about people who work.
He doesn't walk the beat.
No, I know.
With
that's
his
that's why
what
it's
about
the
what
name
about
works.
Vitro? What about Salvitro? That's his neighborhood. He has this,
yeah, Mr.
Yeah,
No. But Mr. Rogerio, he walks around the neighborhood with his plunger.
But that's his area. Are you not understanding that?
Swinging around
no,
like
no,
a club.
Exactly. You're right. That is his area. They even talk about it. They're like,
well, why does Fudy not understand that?
No. Cubitoso, because it works both ways.
It's
Cubitoso
is
saying like, oh, my sister knew Mrs. Rogerio or whatever. It's Mr. Rogerio's
you
neighborhood.
Find me you know, the interview with David Chase where he says it's Mr. Rogers. It's reference to
you know
Mr.
What?
Rogers.
I'm going
to
do my homework.
Or you
here,
find it, or you wait till the Talking Sopranos episode where they get the writer for this fucking thing.
Dude, they're like past us already.
Are they?
Like,
yeah.
Dude,
no. They're like lapping us. They're probably already like starting the series over. Again,
yeah,
you gotta give me more than a Wikipedia page. We'll come back. We'll come
back.
All right,
back.
All right.
We'll find it.
I'll
find
admit,
it.
I'll admit I'm wrong.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. So there wasn't
yeah,
a lot.
Let's
of,
wrap it up.
There wasn't a lot for this episode for fucking internet. So just so some more general questions here. This was from today, on Reddit. User nice woodpecker one.
Hell yeah.
I'm sorry. To amplify this person. Are there any lessons to take from The Sopranos? The Sopranos is a critically acclaimed series. I just wanted to know, is there any lessons we can take from it? What messages did its creators want to convey about human nature and society?
Jesus.
Have it that one.
Like, we could do a whole fucking episode on that.
Well, I think traditionally the message in mob movies or television shows or whatever is right, exactly. Crime doesn't pay. And that's certainly not the message here because Tony Soprano makes fucking bank and does pretty well for himself, and a lot of his associates do for a long time, even if they have like the specter of the law hanging over their shoulder. I don't know. I think maybe that it's all a big nothing. And
nothing,
I think
in the end we die alone.
People
and,
don't change. You've said that before. Like people don't.
Yeah, people don't change.
People don't change. If we're gonna take the you know, a message from a title of an episode, everybody hurts.
Everybody hurts. Yeah, yeah. Even the bad guys have.
Even the rich guys. Even the rich bad guys.
Their redeeming qualities, and they they're still dealing with the same bullshit we all are with our parents and our upbringing and. Whatever traumas we've faced.
Right.
But
don't read too much into it because it's just a bunch of guys stuffing gobbledygook in their face, really.
Yeah. Let's not get too heavy here. I mean, I think the entire series, we could say, is sort of an homage to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
That's right.
But,
I mean, hey, if it is, and I totally missed that.
we'll find out. And then lastly, from user... Harbinger 1998, are there any characters on the show who benefited having Tony in their life? As far as I can see, Tony ruins everyone's life he comes into contact with. Jennifer, Georgie, Richie, Ralph, Christopher, his mother, his girlfriends, and quite a few more. Basically, every person he comes into contact with doesn't profit from Tony being in their life. You could argue his family benefited, but it's not like he's a good husband or father. Was really just wondering if there's a character on the show who benefited having Tony in their life. Far as I can see throughout the whole show, he only causes destruction and misery around him. Was there anyone who benefited? It's a good question.
Zelman.
Like ultimately, like by the end of the series?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
because I guess there's little moments where people benefit, right? They get cash windfall, or they get something they want out of Tony, but like just benefited long run, big picture wise.
It's a good question, I guess.
It is a good question.
Well, we don't know where they end up. We're not sure where they end up. Right. I mean, you know, he could end up dead or in jail, but like, Carmella could have been taken care of, but would she have liked that? No, probably not.
Right.
I don't know.
I think she would have been fine because like they moved all that money offshore and all that.
Right.
And, you know, I think they were so smart with Tony's money.
But she probably would have not liked the fact that her husband is dead or in jail.
Yeah, obviously.
Wait, sorry. We're talking about Carmella?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of somebody who would have benefited, like,
she benefited, but at what price, right? Because we see throughout the series she does have some sort of like moral conflict, and she's got to live with that for the rest of her life. And ultimately, you know, she's got to be, you know, a regular mom, but she's also got to worry about her husband being whacked at a fucking diner, you know?
Right. Like, right.
So really. But let me, like, I mean, for all the shit they went through together, like, do you think Artie might be fair?
Yeah, I guess. He had a successful restaurant after it was burned down.
Well, that's the thing. Like maybe little Pussy Malenga gets whacked in the first episode and Artie's business fails, and that's it. That's the end of Artie.
Right.
So, in a way, I mean, we don't know. We can't know for sure.
The question is,
he squeezes him for so much goddamn money, though. I mean, and get like
the tab and all this,
and talks him into like fucking like the bullshit with Furio and the fucking, and then like he ends up getting so fucked with the Armagnac and all that shit. And like, I mean, Tony ultimately helps him in that situation, but like, it is probably one of the people like that comes closest. But he also sucks him dry so much.
Right. Well, what about this? How about Melfi? Do you think
maybe Melfi?
Yeah. Because maybe she walks away from all this a better therapist, you know? And she also fucking took a lot of his money.
She's like, not gonna do therapy to mobsters anymore. No.
Right. Learned her lesson. She's a better doctor.
Mr. Woo! Spears?
Thank you. No way. Learned my lesson from him.
That was a close one.
I mean, I guess, are we to assume that she may have
died too? Yeah, she was killed.
Yeah, she died the next night in the same diner.
They cut the scene where she walks into Holston's and gets fucking whacked.
Yeah.
By the New York crew. Butchie has her killed. She knows too much.
They shot that scene just to throw off people.
Just kidding. I mean, like, are we to assume that Melfi would have been an alcoholic, like, anyway? And, like, wasn't
maybe. But, I mean, she struggles. She dabbles, I feel in alcoholism.
It's genetic, obviously. It's not like Tony gave her alcoholism. But like, would she have been able to live with it easier if she didn't feel like she...
Well, I don't know that she would have started drinking if not for Tony.
Like, started drinking.
Not before therapy sessions.
Yeah, definitely not. Yeah, when you're doing it in your office, it's a problem. Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty negative... thing. And like, who knows like how that affected other patients of hers.
Well, one of them clearly killed themselves.
One of them killed themselves.
Well, that guy got fucked by Tony Soprano.
That was Gloria.
Oh, I thought you were thinking of
Oh no, well, I was thinking of the guy she says like when she was on the lam, She's like, right. One of my patients committed suicide because right. I couldn't.
There's that. There's never. Now.
Oh, there's that two. Two yeah, suicides on Tony's right. fucking hands. Jesus.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So unclear. Harbinger 1998.
Sounds like.
But, it's a very good question.
Yeah, no, that is yeah. a good question.
Good question. And that's all I got.
Very nice.
All right.
Spells. I've been thinking about betting.
Well, hey,
you have any ideas? Well,
hey, guess what, Dave? The wait is finally over. Oh, football yeah. is back. You might not.
Oh, yeah, I got the game on right now.
You might not be at a game this year, unless you're in Kansas City or Jacksonville and you're a monster scumbag monster. But you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. Coaching props. Like if what? Belichick doesn't wear a hoodie or some shit?
Right, right.
Okay. Bet
if Andy Reid doesn't have a fogged up shield on.
Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opener bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE. That's promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Very nice, very nice. All right, boys. I'm excited we're into season 3.
Hell yeah.
Excellent season.
It's going to be a good season. We're going to have some good guests.
We're going to get some
Johnny the Nut.
Yeah, we'll get some good guests. We'll get some more, you know,
straight cis, white
males. Maybe we should get like a Olivia Soprano wake orgy scene for next episode.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, sure.
As always, guys, email us any questions, comments, concerns you have at osopranospod@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on the socials at osopranospod on Instagram and Twitter. Yeah, guys, we did it.
Let's fucking do it. Season 3. Oh!
Oh!